Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into the Patriots Talk Podcast. Special guest today, we have Chris Long, former Philadelphia Eagle, former New England Patriot, Super Bowl champion with both. He's going to talk plenty about this week's matchup. He's going to talk plenty about Super Bowl 52. We're going to get his thoughts on the Colin Kaepernick workout coming up this Saturday. He's one of the most fascinating professional athletes, one of the most fascinating public figures in my estimation that I've dealt with over the course of time. So I want you to enjoy the hell out of Chris Long. And here's our guy right now, Chris Long, and really happy to have you aboard. How you doing, my friend?
Good, brother. How are you?
I'm great. How is retirement? Honestly.
Retirement? No, honestly, I kind of love it. There's some things I miss. Like, I miss making plays, like, but that's about it. I don't miss practice. I don't miss some of the stress, you know, coming in on Mondays after tough losses. There's two sides of the coin playing pro ball. So listen,
but those 30 to 50 plays, just the athletic aspect and
I miss that. Mm-hmm. I do miss that, you know, like and part of that is when you retire, when you know you can play more, that's kind of the flip side of that coin. And, you know, for a lot of guys that are retiring, it's a struggle. Do I go out a little bit early or a little bit late? And I just didn't want to be the guy that was too late. So that's the struggle for me. It'd be almost better if I got carted off and was like, I can't do this anymore. Yep. But, you know, watching on Sunday, a competitor in me is like, oh, I could still make that play. But then I remember when I see a team lose like 30-10, that Monday is the worst day in the world in an NFL locker room and meetings room. So I'm good at home and I'm busy with building my digital media company and my pods and Thursday Night Football and The Ringer on Monday. So I'm just as busy as I was.
How has your body responded since you've stopped? I mean, you look slimmer. I know you guys are very protective of your size. Anytime you tell an athlete that is a big dude, hey, you look skinnier, that bums them out. But how does your body respond?
No, I'm not bummed at all. I'm not bummed at all. I knew that, like, listen, I've always been a guy that struggled to keep on weight more than actually, like, put it on easily. You know, in the off season, routinely, you know, I was with the Rams, and I was playing in a 4-3, and I was playing in a 4-eye a lot in an attack scheme with Greg Williams, playing inside, playing outside. I was 270 pounds, and then I got lighter, down to 260, and I went to came to play in New England. I thought I was going to be more of a backer, so I dropped down to the high 250s. Next thing you know, I'm in a 3 technique. So I'm like, I've been on this weight fluctuation, trying to gain weight in a fall there, and then getting back to a 4-3, gaining a little bit of weight, 265, and then I was down at like 242 after retirement.
You like it down there?
I like the way it felt, but then I looked at myself in the mirror sometimes. I was like, what the hell are you doing? You look like
Nick Casario.
Yeah, exactly. I look like Nick. I look like one of these trail runner guys. Like, you know, so I put on another like 10 pounds. I'm back up in the 50s and I feel good there.
And the body, the hips, the legs, the neck, the shoulders. Yeah. Tremendous.
I feel good, man. That's awesome. I feel good. Yeah, I feel good. So, and that can be, you know, that can be a bit of a mind, you know what, because I'll feel good and then I'll go to do something that I couldn't even do when I was playing, you know, because I feel like a kid again. My joints feel great. I was playing with my son the other day, playing hide and go seek. So I hide up on the counter in the kitchen around course, the corner.
Why wouldn't you?
And then when he finally finds me, I jump down and I'm like, dude, you can't be jumping down off the kitchen counter. My back hurt within an hour. I'm like, you know, and that's the thing is like, I feel great. So I can do all this dumb stuff, but then your body reminds you, you're still 34.
See, you got to check that stuff off. And I mean, it's going to be difficult to put that behind you, but the days of being on the counter and jumping off to scare the kid.
Exactly.
You know, you've moved on. I do want to ask about your different pursuits, the Water Boys, the Ringer stuff. Take us through that gently and slowly so it's not just a recitation. Whatever order you want to, because I think it's important the number of different things you do, because not just the charity work, but also the accessibility of you as a personality and a touchstone to kind of bridge the us normies.
Yeah.
To NFL players. I think you're a unique voice in this.
Well, listen, I think I'm normal. So, like, my thing is, you know, you say normies, I'm pretty normal. And I think I can't speak for other players, but I always felt like I was not out of place, but I was a regular guy playing the NFL. Mm-hmm. And you know, to a lot of people, that's a big deal. And that makes them look at themselves a little differently. But, you know, for me, you know, we know my pop's history, you know, we know, you know, Hall of Famer, won a Super Bowl. So for me, you know, any individual success or team success or attention I'm getting, it's like over my career. Yeah. I mean, like, no, I mean, to me, it's like, okay, well, I'm not a big deal. You know, my pop's a big deal. You know, I'm another player that, you know, I got a brother that, you know, was a 3-time Pro Bowler and, you know, has had a really nice career so far. And so it's not a big deal. So I never thought of myself that way. So mm-hmm. I like to run my social media, you know, my podcast, you know, my analysis of the game. You know, I try to level myself with everybody else because that's who I am. So so hopefully that comes across. But
what's the podcast? Just so we can get the name out for folks.
Yeah, it's called Greenlight. And it goes, we're kind of a Tuesday, Friday operation right now. I also had an interview kind of show. It's my take on a long form interview show. It's not quite like Joe Rogan, but it's a little bit shorter and a little bit more polished. It's more studio, but we did that and it's called Fishbowl. We taped that all fall or all summer, and now it's going to be out all fall. And this stuff is going to be carried under the umbrella of Chalk Media, which is a media company I'm starting that's going to pull some different, you know, players and personalities in to do pods, different long form stuff, you know, shows, the whole nine.
One of the
written
things
work.
When you say, okay, when someone says, okay, well, that's great. Well, what are your aims going to be when you're doing this? It's not just football. I know it's different concerns.
No, yeah. It's football. It's different sports. It's pop culture. It's, you know, my biggest goal is to curate something content wise that includes the most interesting athletes and the most interesting personalities. Like, we don't want any filler, and we're going to grow at a rate where I'm like, right now I'm hiring talent. Like, I'm not going to go out and throw like a million checks at people because I just want more content. You know, some people might think that way, but I want quality stuff and I want people that have something interesting to say and they're not canned talking points. And you know the difference between athletes that stick to the script and don't. And sticking to the script is fine. Like, it's not for everybody to just kind of be more of an open book. It's funny. There's a spectrum of athletes that, you know, there's Kawhi Leonard, who's a closed book, and that works for him. And zero criticism of that. And then there's guys that are real brand oriented and all they want to do is stick to the talking points and get their name out there and keep it clean. And then there's guys that really don't give a you know what.
It's funny because this notion, and this struck me a few years ago when the whole notion of stick to sports came out. I don't necessarily want people to stick to sports, whether it be me, you, anybody within the league. All I want, though, is an educated opinion and the ability to say, I don't know when you don't know.
Exactly. Like, and we've all failed there at times. Like, listen, I've had moments where I got in over my head talking about something. Largely, though, I try to be educated on what I'm talking about. And also, like, I'm not starting. I know, like, it's funny because my career trajectory has been weird. you know, I played my ass off for a long time in a place that nobody was watching. So for me, I often go back and look at my career, and I was wondering if I was in New England or Philly or somewhere like that when I was, you know, 40 sacks in 4 years, or, you know, team captain, individual accolades, like people think of me differently. But the funny thing, and I didn't plan it like this, was as I got my foundation going, I was kind of leaving St. Louis, and I ended up in bigger markets on better teams. And when I was enjoying a lot of team success, I was kind of the cagey vet.
Yeah, but you were novel to us too. You, when you came here, it's like, oh, this, there's Chris Long. Let's talk to Chris Long. Oh, Chris Long is engaging as hell.
Well,
and it was, but
I'm
was...
used to St. Louis, where it's like nobody really cared. Like, I could say what I want. So I'm trained in an environment where maybe I wasn't so wounded by being in bigger markets where people were going to hammer you on everything you said. Like, St. Louis was chill. And then on top of that, though, the confluence of all that off the field stuff in the big market situation where I'm more visible, the social justice stuff happened. And I think everybody always views me like that didn't know who I was when I was balling out in St. Louis, because I couldn't blame you. Nobody's watching those games, but like people think of me as like charity guy and social justice yep. guy. And like, I'm not starting a political, like I have my politics and I'm not afraid to talk about them, but I'm not starting a political, you know, I have some people who agree with me ideologically and all that stuff. It's like, can't wait to see your, you know, chalk media. I can't wait to hear 100%. You. I'm like, dude, I want to talk about sports and pop culture yeah. and things I'm interested in.
I can't wait to hear your take on Biden and the squad.
On who?
Just the notion that we have to weigh in on politics. I have a constant conversation with people that, look, people use the word politics, but what they're really talking about is sociology.
Yes.
And
yes.
And we're not, I'm not talking legislature. I can't get into Medicare for all. I can talk about what I think is an appropriate way to sentence, or but I don't know the legislation behind sentencing for mm-hmm. weed or capital punishment. I know how I feel about those things.
For the devil's lettuce.
That's right. For the devil's lettuce. So,
no, I mean, like, and here's the biggest thing is you touched on it. And again, I'm not. When sports and politics intersect, or if one day I wake up on my pod and there's something going on that's quote unquote political, I want to talk about it, I'm going to talk about it. That's why I decided to work for myself, not somebody else. And at the end of the day, a lot of the stuff that we're classifying as political is just more like things that people don't want to talk about that are hard issues. Like politics and like you said, sociology are hard issues. Like people conflate those things a lot because politics is kind of a code now for something I don't want to hear about.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to go too far down that road because it's not reflective of what I'm like. Listen, when I feel like talking about quote unquote politics, I will, but I'm starting a sports and pop culture digital media company, where people with different views come together and have fun and we can be funny. We can be edgy, raw, but we also don't lose the X's and O's because that's important to me.
100%. And I am going to have you just weigh in your take, knee jerk, as you saw the Colin Kaepernick is going to have an orchestrated yeah. event on Saturday. Really feels like a dog and pony show. And that to me is a political stance by the NFL to say, we got to cover our ass with this.
Yes.
So,
and that is, it's politics intersecting with sociology. It's politics on an NFL level. It's politics from a court of public opinion level, and then it's politics on like a legislative level and some of the things that Cap has been fighting for, and then it's hopefully some football. But I've been fooled enough by, you know, the league at large, watching from afar on stuff, that you got to show me that this is something real. Mm-hmm. And Cap's smart. I think Cap's very careful. You barely hear from him, you know, for a long time. And me being somebody, one of the first people to speak out about Cap, even when I was just getting my new job in New England, in retrospect, I don't know why it wasn't the wisest thing, but I did it because I can't keep my mouth shut on issues that are important to me. So, you know, I'm looking at Cap, and there's been times over the last couple of years where I'm like, man, I wish he'd say something. And right. that's as somebody who's supporting him and knows that he should be in the league. But I want to know exactly what's going on transparently with his dealings with the league. And I know that that's not the prerogative. You know, other players don't have to do that, but this is a special situation. And I want to know who's turning him down, who's let him on, and who hasn't called him, because the implications of this are real. And I think he still could play in this league. I'm not saying, I never contended that at the end of his rope there, he was a top 15 mm-hmm. quarterback. I mean, he was bottom third, but if you're a bottom third starting quarterback in a league, like,
there's a job for you. Because there's 90 jobs. There's 90 friggin' jobs. Well, 65, whatever. But now, cynically, when I've looked at the Kaepernick situation, I have felt as if his inability or reticence to be outwardly covetous of a job, to say, I'll go to Canada, I'll go here, I'll go there, as being a reticence about playing anymore. That the advocacy and the activism is more important to him than the actual playing of the football. What's your response to an individual saying that? Me.
I would say that if you ask Malcolm Jenkins what's more important, a game on Sunday or mass incarceration, he'd tell you mass incarceration is more important. Mm-hmm. I mean, because, like, really, we do play a game at the end of the day. So, like, assigning a hierarchy of importance of your values, football included, that's not to say you're not going to work your ass off on football.
But, like, I don't know if he wants to play football.
Well, that's so everything I'm hearing from his camp, and not directly, and I haven't followed everything he said, is that he's been training and he wants to play. And I think he deserves that shot. I mean, somebody who's taken their team to a Super Bowl, and the big misconception about that team in I guess it was 12, was that it was a defense-carried team, and there were some huge names on that defense. That offense was loaded, including Cap, who did something to Green Bay we'd never seen in the playoffs. And so I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that defense carried those teams, and they didn't down the stretch. This is a guy who helped carry his team to a Super Bowl, and a couple play calls here and there, and they probably have a ring. And
I mean, it came down to the last throw, and it was debatable whether or not there was P.I. Look, he was a very good player. I saw today after he had tweeted that I have this and rare tweet from him that I have this workout. I see people in the mentions, which take it for what it's worth. It's just a guy in the 300 section. Yeah, well, you know better than Manziel and Tebow. That's where
we've
gotten it so contorted as to what he really was as a player. Look, he outplayed for an ass team in San Francisco in 2015.
Yes.
And still took care of the ball okay. I mean, you usually see 11 and 13 touchdown interception. I think he was like 16 and
3 or 4.
Reasonable.
So the one year he had was, I guess it was 2014 when I was hurt, because I was watching games at home, and I watched and I said, man, this guy's regressed a lot. And that was the one year that you were like, I don't know what's going on with this guy, etc. But then he stabilized it. And on a bad team, as you mentioned, that was not competitive. We actually went and played them when I was with y'all in New England, and he was still an efficient, good quarterback and with a lot of problems around him. So the problem with this Cap thing is that everybody is so worked up, and that's okay, but people are really binary and they can't think in any nuance or gray area, and they can't concede certain smaller points. Like, so if you hate Cap, he's Johnny Manziel, which is untrue. And if you love Cap, he's Joe Montana, which is untrue. Like, he's a guy who was a starting quarterback, 20th in that range his last year in across the board in a bunch of metrics, which means he's a good quarterback. Which means he can help a team. And now with the Lamar Jackson thing, I don't know if teams are looking at it and saying, Greg Roman, Lamar Jackson, this thing's working out pretty well. Maybe we can copycat league this thing.
The timing is just so frigged up. We're going to parachute in and, hey, you know what? We're having a combine for one guy just before Thanksgiving. What?
And then you have other guys who are taking to Twitter and saying, I don't have a job either, and I knelt.
And you're like,
there's plenty of guys that knelt and are still playing. So, they didn't blackball you for that. You know, they blackballed the leader.
It's just the whole thing got hijacked. Look, I don't agree necessarily entirely with the – once he formulated what his message was going to be and his anthem stance, literal physical stance – it kind of crystallized and made sense. You know, the pig socks, people bring that up. And look, but
Yeah, he may. I didn't agree. Listen, if you're going to do
crystallized,
if you're going to do a serious thing, which he's done, and he has done a lot, and I am a fan of a lot of his work, and I am wholeheartedly in agreement with the things he's fighting for. The Sox thing, like, again, this comes down to, I'm a Cavs supporter. I can concede that that was like an oversight,
yeah,
at the very least. But we're having trouble doing that on both sides of this thing. Is like just admitting when our side, you know, is wrong on one thing. But at the end of the day, some Sox don't cancel out, and you're not insinuating this, all the good work that he's done in communities and the social commentary.
I want to move forward because I don't want to take up too much of your time, but there was something that you tweeted the other day relative to your social anxiety. I can't remember what it was. You had a decision to make.
Yeah, at the gym. I did.
And I looked at that and I said, shit, we all get sweaty palms. We all say it's going to be who's on the phone when it rings. You're like, oh, shit. Like, oh, who's this going to be?
Especially me. Yeah.
When did you realize?
I'm telephobic.
Yeah, shit. Like, I mean, I even hear a text. I'm like, flinch, who the hell's that? What do they want? But we're spending a lot of time on mental health this month at NBC Sports Boston and just the awareness of it. And a lot of players, whether it be Ted Johnson or a number of guys, Jaylen Brown with the Celtics, Brad Stevens speaking up and speaking about the importance of it. What is your relationship to your brain these days, Chris?
Well, listen, I mean, it's funny because I am somebody with, you know, some baseline anxiety. Like I'm not looking to be some
100%.
And listen, I'm not looking to be some guy that writes an open letter about his anxiety to the Players Tribune. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. And like, there's people that need to be like spokespeople for these issues. Like, my plate's full.
You're not paralyzed.
You know, I'm casually admitting that, like, yeah, I have some social anxiety. I have some baseline anxiety, and the gym can be a scary place, which is, I'm half joking, but you know, that's
what
a longer conversation.
What makes you anxious? Crowds, people, not knowing what people are coming to talk to you for? That to me
After a while, yeah, like the angles. and then generally, like, anybody that knows me and any fan that's interacted with me, not on Twitter, because you give me respect, I give you respect, and Twitter, there's no respect.
Right.
But like, anybody that's met me in person would tell you that I take my time to speak with you. I'm very appreciative of people that have supported me. We have a number of people who are fans of not only the work, you know, that teams that I've been on have done, you know, stuff that I've done on the field, but like the off the field stuff. So I love that stuff. But people that don't show respect, or people that have angles, or people that, you know, think that you are a piece of meat, just like I can treat you however you want to treat you, after a while you get conditioned to starting to expect things like that, which is not healthy. And as football players, I think we all work on it, whether we know it or not. It's like, we can't assume that everybody's out to get you or entrap you or is going to stand by the bicep machine for 30 minutes and tell you 15 stories about all the Patriots games they were at. Like, there's just like, I love fans, but after a while you get a little bit anxious because you're just not sure where anything's going.
Well, and the funny thing is I get it. I've lived here all my life, and just the amount of television I've done, you're in line at Dunkin' Donuts and you can sense the double take out of the corner of your eye. You're like, oh shit.
And it might be nothing. And that's when you're like, am I vain?
9 times out of 10, it's like your work.
Yeah. Yeah,
but then this,
somebody might be staring at my tattoos. Like, is this guy a biker? Like, you know, like there could be something that has nothing to do with football. And the problem is, and this is the internal discussion you have to have with yourself, is like, when you walk in a room, are you being vain? Are you being like, you know, are you
right.
over assuming your worth to everybody in the room, or are you just like, there's a thin line between doing that and being prepared to know where your blind spots are, and like, okay, this guy's about to come over and he's going to take a sneaky picture, or, you know, or this person's going to, you know, be recording my conversation, or, you know, like, there's just, you can't believe some of the things and nobody's complaining. We make a bunch of money. I'm not like, I love fans and I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world to play in the NFL.
But social media, the ability to say I was adjacent to Chris Long in a line at Qdoba. And just,
man, if that's your claim, you got to go get a better, like, go get a boom tower at Qdoba or something. Like,
good point.
Get somebody, get a cooler one.
Quick football stuff before we wrap it up. Super Bowl 52, I think, was a landmark game, obviously, for the team that you were playing for at the time, but certainly for the one that we were here covering and that you had been with in 2016. What was the win for the Eagles like from the perspective of Chris Long that year?
Well, it was crazy because, of course, I apologize for the echo. I am ironically headed to the gym walking down the stairs. But, like, it was just so different because I wait my whole career to even make the playoffs. You know, I get to New England. I know I'm a mercenary. I'm, like, here to play my role, do my job, as y'all like to say, and and try to win a championship. Because when I got to New England, I was like, this is it for me. Like, you know, I'm coming off of two IRs in a row. I've had bad luck. I got cap casualty. Like, I need to win now. And then the Philly thing was way more like, okay, that monkey's off my back. And that was a wonderful year, by the way. I mean, like, I was going through parade videos the other day. You know, I was sending Jules a video of me with the Julian Edelman mask. I still talk to Hightower. I talk to Slate. What a special group of guys. Like, I understand the fun thing. And there's some people that don't enjoy it. I love my teammates, and I enjoyed learning from Coach. And, you know, people are passionate. But the difference between New England and Philly was, like, that was the first time. So whatever it was like when the Patriots won for the first time, that's what I walked into in Philly.
Which is unmitigated fun.
Yeah,
I mean, 2016 was – I mean, to see them come back from 28-3, other teams would have folded – it's like, well, the expectation is that we don't fold because this is our birthright. We just put our heads down and plow forward. It's an expectation.
Well, it's a conditioning. And this was when I was in New England at the half. I'm not going to be one of these fake people. And I don't know what the percentage of players that you've asked, like, did you think you'd win or not? You know what I mean?
Yep.
I'm not going to be the fake person that's like, oh, yeah, I knew we'd win. I'm conditioned. I've won seven games in my career once in a season.
You know, like, what a loss smells like?
I went 1-14 or 1-15, 2-14, 1-15 to start my career. Like I'm conditioned to lose. So this is why I need to, like, you know, I'm sitting on the bench next to Ninko. Like, is this it? Is this what we work for? And, like, you know, Ninko gave me just enough optimism. And hearing guys like, I think it was Duran at halftime being like, we're going to win this game. When I heard that at first, I was like, well, we should just, like, maybe get a stop first. or like, you know, hey, man, you're kind of crazy, but we've got 30 more minutes. Why not? Like, let's go ride out. And that was a special. It was one of the craziest few hours of my life. And then obviously the Philly thing was crazy in its own right because we were playing with a backup quarterback. Quote unquote. And we were underdogs the entire time. And I know some people get annoyed that we did that thing, but that's what lit a fire under our ass. It was us against the world, and y'all do it all the time.
Oh my God. They did it the entire year last year.
I didn't know the entire, like, yeah. I mean, you would think the entire world was against the Patriots. They're one of the most popular teams in the world. There are their haters, but you got to draw from stuff like that.
I guess what became interesting in the wake of the loss by the Patriots was the conversation about fun and the definition of fun. In 2017, the Patriots lamented, whether it be Tom and Gronk saying, the only place I have fun is on the field. If you have to start that vehicle, go ahead.
No, I'm good. I'm in the car.
All right.
You're good.
But the whole conversation about fun, it was a fun-free year, it seemed, around the team. The only place that they were finding fun was on the field. Meanwhile, the fun in Philly was very much contrastable. Is football supposed to be fun, though?
Yeah, football. Okay, so there's a ton of different ways to do things, and it's a deeper conversation because in New England, yeah, I mean, like, they tend to do things a certain way, and there's the Patriot way, but you also have – you've had the GOAT for 20 years, and you've got the hoodie. So, like, that continuity – and, of course, part of that is the way Bill does things and the way they've designed that organization. There's things that I've left there at times and said – man, I miss doing it that way. I mean, like, that was the way to do it. And there's things that I didn't agree with, you know, but, like, that's on every organizational level. Like, if you walked into Seattle, And that's a team that is, you know, Malcolm's play away from being a multiple Super Bowl winner in Pete's tenure. Like, they have a very different way of doing things than Bill. And, you know, like, what's the difference? I don't know. I mean, every organization is different, and some are more fun, quote unquote, than others. I also considered having a bunch of awesome teammates in New England a lot of fun, and I thought winning was a lot of fun because for 8 years, you know, I was on crap teams. So it's hard to ask me because I'd never experienced fun at all.
My last question is, and take as long as you want to, I don't want to slow you from the gym too much, but what about the arc of the two teams since that day? You know, the Patriots, yeah. I think Brady has alluded to it, the loss was in some ways cathartic for them. Yeah, it was shitty. Yeah, they had to process the Butler stuff. They had to work through with Gronk how things were going to proceed. But I think, you know, my gathering is that Bill kind of came to a conclusion where he extended the olive branch to Brady, said, we got to do some things differently. Tom, being the way he is, was happily able to accept that, and they move forward. Meanwhile, processing for Philly how to stay at the top has been different. So you're just, how do you view the tracks the two teams have been on since that day in February?
Well, listen, I think both teams have great coaches in Doug and Bill, and obviously Bill's, you know, the GOAT, and Doug's a younger mind in the game. But like you said, the way they've done things have worked, and the two teams are in different situations. Where Bill, the thing that always impressed me about the Patriots is that over a 20-year span, and even within seasons, they've morphed into different teams. And, you know, you're seeing it right now with the Rams. They, I don't know if they did this, and I don't think there was any foresight here, but they are a calendar year away from beating from last year's win over the Chiefs in that game that everybody remembers. It was like a Big 12 game, 54-51, okay? And then juxtaposed with what just happened Sunday, I don't think they realized it, but they turned into a defensive football team overnight. But when you turn into a defensive football team, you have to have an offense that can sustain that style of play. And so it's just things like that. Like, okay, the Patriots make that switch within an 8-month span, you know, organizationally.
Yep.
And, you know, as evidenced by, they ran us out of the gym defensively in the Super Bowl, but they couldn't play defense. Like, so Bill saw that, and he's like, we need a seismic shift. And the adjustments are made from how you play offense too, which is a little bit different than, like, you know, changing from that McVay air raid, like,
up-tempo, you know, we'll get it in chunks.
You have the GOAT under center. You have a physical team, so you're ready to make that transition, and you're at more of a center line where you can morph. You know, in LA, they've undergone that big transition, and you see what most organizations do when they make a flip from one side of the ball to the other, or style of play. Like, they can't sustain that in a year. Like, so it's amazing to me that the Pats have been able to go up and down, ebb and flow. I mean, listen, we ran the defense out of the gym in that Super Bowl, but they fixed it in the very next year. They shut down that very Rams team mm-hmm. that I just spoke about in the Super Bowl and held them to like 3 points. So, I mean, the Patriots are impressive the way they do things. They've changed. Now they've got their own challenges this year because, you know, obviously the David Andrews loss is huge. Gronk loss that everybody talks about is huge, but the Devlin loss is really big because, as you know,
they were
late in the year
people,
last year, they were getting in 21 and they were bullying people. And this year it's not the same deal. And, you know, there's been issues at wideout. I mean, just, you know, is Tom playing with a full deck? That's what interests me. And it's a big domino effect on Sunday. Now what's happened to the Eagles is we have this recency bias where we look at our 17 team, and that was lightning in a bottle. It's definitely sustainable because you had a lot of good pieces, but that team kind of broke up. Like, we, you know, a lot of those vets that came in that year that I came in, Self, you know, Selleck was there,
mm-hmm.
Patrick Robinson,
yep.
who made some big plays down the stretch. And by the way, was a really good nickel corner for us. And that's a position that's never been stabilized. And then you lose guys like LeGarrette Blount. So in addition to losing a lot of those veteran pieces, the offense over the past 2 years has changed a lot. I know it's a lot of the same faces and names, but that was a fast, fast offense that y'all saw in 17 in the Super Bowl. This is a team that's been more ball control and has kind of morphed over the season to realizing, oh, maybe we need to run the ball. Like,
and it's
Jordan
almost
pretty good.
And it's almost Miles like Foles was built for that. Foles was built because of the Chip Kelly period to play fast.
Exactly.
So it is fascinating.
And what you said is a great point, because Foles was built to, you know, get the calls, go through his progression, and make the throw. And it was more timing, where he doesn't have that upside from a playmaking ability and the big, like, impressive throws on the sideline, across the field, on the move. Like, that's what Carson does well. And that's why you keep Carson, because he has so much upside, and he's played really well. And in 16, he was – in 17, he was on that MVP-like tear, and he got hurt. But long story short, this Eagles team now is looking at it, and – they've had a number of things they've had to adjust through the year on, you know, one being stabilizing the pass rush, the guys they brought in that completely were catalysts for them changing everything, including myself being collateral, Michael Bennett being collateral. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't need as many ends rushing all over the place. We need more three down linemen. So you bring in Malik Jackson, you let me walk in a way. And then Malik gets hurt the first game, so then they have to go out and trade for Jannard Avery. They play with Brandon Graham. He's inside, he's out. He's a great inside rusher. He's a really good outside rusher, but he's best inside. So, mm-hmm. like, they have to bring somebody in. And then the defensive backfield, they've had injuries. That's the matchup I worry about on Sunday. I mean, I also worry about maybe the way you guys use your backs and get them on the linebackers. I mean, we've got some good coverage young linebackers that have been more looked at as special teams guys, but have gotten a lot of snaps. How do they match up against the James Whites of the world?
Do you self-identify as an Eagle or a Patriot?
I identify more as an Eagle because...
I can hear it.
Well, I do, because that's where I finished my career. I spent two years there. I think people like me more there. You know, like... Like me in New England, but I came in to play a role. And to my credit, I played it. I always kept it professional. And if I didn't like the way I was being used, I just played my ass off.
Mm-hmm.
And I left. And it wasn't like there was ill will. It was just like, if I'm 32, 33, I need to be playing to my strengths. Like
it was a very professional relationship that you had here. I thought it was, because you do see guys come in here, not like it, kick rocks, intimate, passive aggressive out the ass, and then by the time they leave, it's like, that place sucked, Bill sucks, and it's
well,
a mature approach.
I'm always going to be honest, and like, listen, did I agree with all the way I was used schematically? No, but we won a Super Bowl, so like, I don't care. Like all I can control is that at the end of the year, when I was a free agent on that 1 year, take some inventory and where do I want to keep playing football? And I had checked off that box, won a Super Bowl, had no idea we'd do it in Philly. But yeah, back to the game. I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting ball game, because our O-line, Philly's O-line is still very, very good. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one area that up front, we've got you guys a little bit on.
Can run
it. Not the backers, but more the front guys, because you guys backers are total studs. I think I worry about the backs on our linebackers in coverage. I worry about Tom picking apart the secondary. You always worry about that with the GOAT. He went for like 600 in the Super Bowl. And then on the other side of the ball, I mean, again, it's going to be one up front. So the pass rush is going to be an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know how we generate pass rush. Does Jim decide to blitz a lot? Does he decide to just get pressure with four? It's going to be super interesting. I don't know.
Dude, I don't want to keep you on any longer. I want you to go to the gym so that we, at some point, the next time I bang in, you don't get a whole wave of anxiety and say, oh, shit, this guy's a 45-minute operation.
No, I like talking to my friends, man. So, you know, you were always cool to me when I was there, so I appreciate it.
If there's anything I can do for you, anything I can do for you down the road, I will be happy to do that. And thank you for the time. And this was great.
Well, Tom, before I go, you're going to be kicking me off the phone here. On my pod yesterday, I had to draw, you know, I have this notion. I'm a Knicks fan for a long time.
Oh yeah, this is good.
And I think I deserve a side team, like, you know, to mitigate my losses every other night, and have something to look forward to. So we drew we drew, you know, my co-host got, we flipped a coin. If he won the coin toss, you got to pick my side team for the year. And guess who he picked?
Celtics?
Yes.
Oh, good. That's going to be a great side team. Embraceable, lovable. God bless them.
God bless them. You got to teach me about the Celtics. That's the thing. And I got to at least act like I care.
Oh, well, this is great.
I'm a Knicks fan. I can't stand it.
No, you're going to love it. You're going to really – it's going to be bliss for you. And we're going to get you up to a game here because this is your side team. We'll get you up here. We'll get you in the box. We'll get you on halftime with Tommy Heinsohn. No problem. You are going to be the Knicks are going to end up being your side team by the end of the year, bro.
Oh, I don't know about that, but it's funny. I looked at it. It's a likable team, man. Jason Tatum from St. Louis, Taco Fall, he seems cool.
Oh, they're all great.
Tall. You know, I really like Marcus Smart. I've always said he's like a football player with basketball skills. So I look forward to acting like I like the Celtics.
You're going to have a great time. Embrace okay. this. All right, man.
Okay. All right, man. See you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Wow, that was great. Definitely hope I didn't keep him too long so that he won't come back. I think it went fine, though. I hope you enjoyed the pod, and we'll talk to you. Hell, we'll talk to you later in the week. Phil and I are going to go more in depth on this Eagles-Patriots matchup, and we'll have Ruben Frank from our sister station down in Philadelphia, NBC Sports Philly. So, ciao.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.